It's Asha week. It's my favorite time of the year, and I've only been to Asha one time. And I
wish really I was going back this year.
But if you are in Asha, make sure you are heading over to the Newsline booth at booth 331. You want to say hi over there because
you can go see Mei Ling. You got to stop by and say hi.
Yes. Mei Ling, you are doing interviews there, right?
Yes, I am. Live podcast interviews with a lot of major people. We'll have the SLP podcasters. We'll have the SLP bloggers. And then a couple of exceptional leaders are going to be popping over there.
And if you're not going there, you can still get a free digital goodie bag. So that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to exceptionaled.com. That's exceptionaled.com/Asha18 beginning 11/15 through the end of the year. Michelle, what are they going to get over there?
Well, it definitely has all the checklists, how-tos, other great resources for AAC and speech therapy from leaders like Rachel. I'm going to say her name wrong. I'm so sorry, Rachel. Rachel Madel.
Madel.
I'm sorry, Rachel. With Talking with Tech, Daniel Reed with Sublime Speech, Tracy Sipple with the telepractice expert, and there's going to be more than that too, I'm sure.
Go to exceptionaled.com/Asha18. Sign up. Anyone who signs up, you'll get access to Newsline's news, jobs, education, and more.
Oh, did we mention the $100 Amazon gift card?
I was hoping.
How could we forget that?
Well, I'm so excited because we have these cool buttons, just like, what was that one where they say vote for Pedro? Do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes, Napoleon Dynamite. So it's the same font and it says vote for me. So if anyone comes by the booth and they want to jump on for a quick, it's like a really quick answer thing, then we're going to be doing it Facebook Live, and whoever gets the most votes or likes, then we're going to take their interview and put it on our exceptional podcast network of podcasts.
And that's I am super awesome. Jealous I'm not going to be there.
So make sure you do. Go sign up at Exceptional. So that's exceptionaled.com/Asha18 starting on the 15th through the end of the year.
Yep. Or go to Newsline booth 331 at Asha. Sign up live and go live with Mei Ling and the crew out there. That's exceptionaled.com/Asha18.
This podcast is sponsored by Q Interactive, Pearson's iPad-based system for testing, scoring, and reporting. Experience unheard-of efficiency and client engagement with 20 of our top tests delivered digitally. Sign up for your free 30-day trial at pearsonclinical.com/speechscience. Then call 1-800-627-7271 to use promo code SPEECHSCIENCE for 10% off your new Q Interactive license. Offer valid until December 31st, 2018.
Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each other.
Bridging what I have in my head to the outside world.
Draws us out of ourselves, draws us into that relationship, you know, builds up our families. Without it, we'd be lost.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to Speech Science, episode number 53. I'm Matt Hott, joined in Kentucky by Michelle Wintering.
Hi, Matt.
And all the way out on the West Coast, Mei Ling Chan.
Hey, welcome.
Mei Ling, it's the first time you're on the air.
With you, yes. I'm super excited to be here with you and Michelle.
Yay!
And hey, we still are going with the M name trend. So
that is true. M cubed still lives on. Michael, Michelle, Matt, Mei Ling, Matt, and Michelle. It works. So if you don't know Mei Ling, quickly, in less than 5 minutes, how do we...
Less than five, all right.
That's good. I have a whole show myself. I got to do this in five. So I'm Mei Ling Chan. I am actually the CEO of Exceptional Ed and also of the Exceptional Podcast Network, where we are sharing professional development courses and information related to special education and disabilities and autism. Just some great, great resources there. And then I'm also a podcast host of Exceptional Leaders, where I get to share amazing people who are committing their lives to helping people with disabilities. Was that under five?
That was under five. And the Exceptional Podcast Network is what we've hooked up with you guys. So now we are the power of, what is it now, three or four podcasts?
Actually, we are debuting the fourth one this week. It's called Exceptional Pod to PD, and they are free 30-minute excerpts of the courses that we share through the free conferences. So we are so excited about that, Matt.
And for anyone that's not in radio, this is what we call synergy, as we all just kind of promote each other.
There you go. I like this. I need to add more podcasts to my download list.
There you go.
I know. There's not enough time.
I was going to say, I think I've got a backlog, no joke, of about 50 episodes.
Well, now that we have our new friends at the SLP Podcasters group, which you can find on Facebook and Instagram, oh my gosh, I'm like just, my phone is just loading up every morning with all of these great new episodes to listen to, and I'm going to get to meet them in person at Asha.
That's right. This is the episode with Asha Week. I am not going to Asha because reasons. Mainly, you're going to Asha, right?
I am. I'm so excited. We're going to be doing live podcasting from the booth.
Woo! And then Michelle,
I wish I could be there.
I thought you were looking at it
to get it worked out, but just our schedule, I just can't do it this year. So I'm planning ahead for next year.
Leave baby speech science with husband speech science. It'll be fine. You need a vacation. Boston has Wahlburgers all over the place. Mark Wahlberg might actually drive you to the Asha convention. I think it'll be fine.
That would be pretty great.
All right. Let's get this episode started. Michelle, how's your week been?
I've been pretty good. I've got a teething 4-month-old, so that's been a little bit of a struggle. Any parents out there can understand. But other than that, we're doing well and enjoying the week.
Mei-Ling, how has your week been?
It's been absolutely crazy. I've been trying to organize all the things that I need to take with me, you know, all of the stuff that we need for the booth, doing the live interviews. We also did a Instagram hop. Have you guys ever done that?
No. Yes, because you made me.
What is an Instagram hop? Tell me.
Oh, gosh. I think I was going to have a nervous breakdown. We all had to do something very specific at the same time, but yet there was like little editing that you have to do for the Instagram post. And I don't know. It was just like so much for my little head. How did you do with it, Matt?
I didn't know what I was doing, but it worked out really well. We got like 200 new followers. And the best part is, Michelle, I finally have the username and the password of the Instagram account.
Oh, good. Because we were discussing this last time where I said, hey, can I start an Instagram? And he said, we have one. I went, what? Wait a second.
Yep. You are free to move about the country now with Instagram.
Oh, great. Yay. Awesome.
And that is how we want you to interact. So who needs speech therapy on the Speech Therapy Podcast? This guy. Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can head us an email, speechscience2018@gmail.com. Give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. Or if you're a texter and not a talker, hashtag speech science, and you will get us on our website. Coming up today, we are going to talk a little bit about how to make a murderer in speech and language therapy. Does anxiety cause dementia later on in life? And you're listening to the Speech Science Podcast.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know why. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're gonna go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Do you have an idea for a product or book? Or are you ready to go beyond in-service presentations? Well, how do you get started? And what if you don't have any business experience at all? Well, I have some great news for you. I'm Mailing Chan, and I'm getting the nitty-gritty stories from parents, teachers, therapists, advocates, and people with disabilities who have created successful businesses, and they're sharing their intimate stories with you. Listen to us on the Exceptional Leaders Podcast and fast-track creating and building and sharing your idea with the world so that you can help more people.
Welcome back to Sweet Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michelle Wintering.
Hello.
And Mei-Ling Chan.
Hello.
Hello. I am finally outnumbered in a field that is 97% women. The podcast has always been at least half the majority male. It's a weird situation to be outnumbered again for the first time since grad.
Turning the curve, Matt.
Oh, it's like grad school all over again. At least you're there to yell at me again, Michelle.
Oh.
So that's Mei-Ling. What happens here. Michelle keeps him in check.
Well,
apparently.
You may not know this, Mei-Ling, but Michelle and I went to Ohio University together.
Oh,
and,
we
did.
That's how we ended up getting through grad school together, was because we needed each other.
That's so true.
Oh.
We all have to suffer through buddies, right?
Exactly, without the buddies. And there was always those people that told you when things were due. That was me. And then the other people that were like, what? You know,
last one. That was me. That was me. I'm like, oh, we have a test today? I just knew about my clinical. Oh, I'm so confused.
And Matt and I were both coming back to grad school without, we took the non-traditional route to speech, I guess, separate routes, but both worked in other fields before becoming speech therapists. So it was a good connection to make.
Well, I was too. I returned after 10 years of finishing.
Did you really? I didn't know that about you.
Look at that.
What were you doing before you were a therapist?
I did have a communications degree, undergraduate degree, and I worked in hotels for a while, and then I stayed home with my babies, so I was really lucky to do that.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I worked in nonprofits, and then Matt was our radio guy, right?
Yeah, right, radio and TV, and somehow it comes back to haunt me on the
full
radio.
Full circle.
It's all in full circle. Well, this first article is coming out of MabelTherapy.com. It's written by a speech and language pathologist over at Mabel Therapy. And unfortunately, she goes goes unaccredited. But talking a little bit about how speech and language therapy could prevent the whole situation of How to Make a Murderer, basically the How to Make a Murderer documentary. Have either one of you guys seen this?
No, this is my first time, actually.
I have not seen it, but it's on my Netflix to watch. But I have been listening to the Serial podcast, which I think is, I know a lot of people who enjoy the Make a Murderer series have enjoyed that Serial podcast on the criminal justice.
Rage.
Yeah. So,
well, to give a background, it's the story of Stephen Avery. He's a man from Wisconsin who served 18 years in prison for the wrongful conviction of sexual assault and attempted murder. He was again charged in 2005 and convicted in 2007 for the murder of Teresa Halbach. However, there are some questions if he really did it or if he was coerced. And this whole article talks about how it could very easily be any of our students or any of our patients that don't have the receptive language skills and could get taken advantage of.
What stood out to me when I was looking through this article was the section on the police interview and what's traditionally considered signs of guilt, because that is so much pragmatic based. And the article is really good. She's kind of split it out with subtitles about struggles for eye contact, asking for clarification, misinterpreting body language and tone of voice, receptive vocab, word finding, so delayed answers, all of that could really make someone look like they're showing guilt or that they're lying when they're really struggling with those basic language skills that we often work on.
Yeah, I also notice here that Brendan was previously assessed with a IQ of 73, and that's kind of important. It does say that the average IQ is 100, and so at 70 is usually when you're looking at some type of disability. So it also says that he was receiving special education services.
Well, my big concern, I work in the high school setting, and what I always tell parents that what I'm working on is if your child were to get pulled over by the police, if they were to get lost, if they were to fill in the blank. And it's very scary, especially when you work with students of that are people of color, and when you're working in a minority community, and there's already that sense of what are the police and you know, pulled over person interactions, and then you add in the level of disability. What if you have a selective mute and they don't talk? All of a sudden now that looks like guilt.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of questions, and I remember back from undergrad psych classes learning about, this has to do with communication as well, but one of the things that's given the most weight in the criminal justice system are testimonies, right? Mm-hmm. So witness testimonies, but one of the things given least weight is the witness testimonies on site, like say at the incident right there. And those are typically more from a memory standpoint that we know that delayed recall versus immediate recall of an event. Often we can kind of tweak our memories without realizing it when you're retelling that story multiple times or when other things are presented to you, that our memories are not as reliable as we want to think they are at times.
And that's in typical typical functioning adults.
Very true. Yeah.
Well, I'm also looking at this. There's one section, as Michelle talked about, there's one section that says the signs of guilt, and they're looking for, as Matt just said, typical body language. And one of them is struggles to make eye contact. And so we usually say if someone's lying, you know, they look up and to the left, I think it is, or was it to the right? I don't know.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Is it really? So, I always make sure I look up when I'm telling the truth, because I was always told that like, that's you're remembering something. So I always just look straight up.
Interesting. Huh.
Evidently, I've been getting the wrong body language all the time now.
I don't
good
know.
Good to know. Well, something interesting about this, though, is that in different cultures, so we're not even talking about intelligence or IQ, but in different cultures, you're just taught to respect people in positions or older people. And so you look down, you do not make eye contact. Body language is like kind of bringing the body in, arms are crossed, you know, things like that. And that's just a cultural difference, and that can be misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm. Culture difference. And then also you kind of said the same thing, but with authority or with parents or with different cultures, who you're talking to. So if you're talking to a police officer or a reporter or a friend or someone younger or older, it could change as well.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear when I'm working with my high school students, is that something like this is going to get, is going to happen around them. And then they're not going to have the tools to be able to do anything. Like I have a student a couple years ago, he's graduated now, when he drove and he was super afraid. He was a stutterer, disfluency. And he was super afraid that like when he got pulled over, what was he going to do? And all we did was we created a little ID card or the size of an ID card that he could hand to the officer with his ID that said, I have a stutter. The more nervous I am, the worse it gets. Please ask me as many yes or no questions as you can. And hopefully you never got pulled over, but like, right. You know, I don't know. If you're listening out there and you remember that story, please give me a call. Let me know that you didn't get pulled over, I guess.
That's a great accommodation though. And I know some of the high schoolers that I worked with who were learning to drive, who were deaf, did the same thing, that they carried cards to let the police officer, whoever it was, know. You know, I have a hearing loss, I'm deaf, that I communicate with sign language, whatever it is, so that they can get the appropriate accommodation and actually be able to communicate versus someone thinking that they're purposely going against what they're being told.
Yeah, she also brings up social skills, pragmatic skills. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's been a very big area in the last couple of years that has now been put into our responsibilities, you know, of speech language pathologists. And I had to ramp up myself because when I had graduated 12 years ago, that was not a real focus for us. And so here I was, you know, trying to learn about social skills. And I really felt like I'm not going to be able to pre-teach every circumstance. And this is, you know, a perfect example of that mm-hmm. is, right? You know, you have bullying, and we have, I have a student now who his response is typically negative. That's just the way that he is. And so we try to get him to look at the other person's perspective. And I try to do functional communication. So, you know, when we're in social groups, bringing up or highlighting a situation and trying to get him to think about it, but you really can't stay ahead of every possible scenario.
It's similar to when we look at AAC and a parent will ask me, hey, you know, how soon can he use this to, or she use this to do whatever, participate in class, order food. And there's over, you know, we're on the device that I'm thinking of, it's MinSpeak. And within three button hits, they have 500,000 vocabulary words. I think I'm a pretty decent above average therapist, but like, even on my good day, working with a kid for 12 hours in a row, I'm not hitting 500,000 vocabulary words or every social situation that the student's going to get into. We want to hear from you, though. So what are you doing to accommodate for your students? Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. And from there, you can email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail, 614-681-1798. The next article, this one's coming out of U.S. News and usnews.com, looks at anxiety as a risk factor. I cannot speak tonight. It is Monday. I cannot talk. Is anxiety a risk factor for dementia later in life? The article really looked at how dementia over an interval of at least 10 years, there was an increased risk. Now, is this true anxiety, or could it be the early onset symptoms of the dementia manifesting as anxiety?
This article is going to give people with anxiety a lot more anxiety.
Exactly. Yeah, right? It's giving me anxiety.
That's what I'm looking at it going, oh gosh, this is.
I mean,
when does midlife start?
Midlife starts whenever you want it to. I'm closing in on 35. I hope that's not midlife for me.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, like realistically, I like Michelle, I know you work with youth. Mailing, mm-hmm. do you work with adults or children mostly?
I've had a very broad background. Okay. I did work in the geriatric end of life. I've worked in the acute setting, trachs and vents, you know, adult trauma. So I've had everything. And now I am in the schools.
So when I read this and I see that they say anxiety disorder could be, you know, blah, 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 blah. And part of me, my therapy brain wants to click over to when I work with my adult patients and I see the signs of dementia, there's an increased level of confusion, anxiety that I need to be doing something. I don't know what I need to be doing. So I better get up and walk around until I find out what I need to do or fall down and hit my life alert button. I mean, it's funny, but it's true. It's that anxiety of like, I should be doing something. So is this really anxiety, or is it just early onset dementia?
Well, the anxiety comes because they're starting to notice that they're losing those basic memory things, you know, their organizational skills, planning. So when I was working with Health South, I would see patients for about, you know, 3 months. And there was one patient I remember walking in for the first time, and he had all of these yellow sticky notes up on the wall next to his bed. So he was ambulatory. And he was post, I can't remember, I think it was an ortho surgery. So they had me go in because he was having some memory issues. So on his wall, I mean, it really was amazing, was all these little post-it notes in different sizes too. He had purchased the different sizes. And he said, this is how I'm remembering everything that's going on here. He said, you know, I can't remember when the doctors come. I can't remember what they say to me. I can't remember when I'm supposed to do anything. You know, I'm supposed to go down to activities. So I have this, he said, and at home, I also have this. And he had the anxiety that we're talking about, Matt. He had that because he knew that he was starting to lose the basic, you know, ability to juggle these things in his head. And he even asked me, you know, am I starting with dementia? And of course, I was like, I'm not able to tell you that. Of course, these are great strategies. We talked about more strategies. But yes, I would say the anxiety comes because of that recognition. And then I have worked, unfortunately, I've worked in the lockdown memory units. And Matt, it is amazing because there are times when people are more aware and more lucid, right? And then there are times when they, you know, they really don't have, they can't capture any, even short-term memories. It's really difficult.
And you're right. When you are in that in-between of being more aware and aware of any deficits you have, that is going to cause more anxiety. And the article did also note, you know, I hate to say we don't have an answer, but we do have to remember it is correlational right now, that we don't have a causal for anxiety in midlife with increased risk of dementia. But it does seem that people with dementia often have some level of anxiety.
It said there that there's 10 years of separation between the anxiety symptoms and then the actual diagnosis of dementia. And also that's an honesty factor because you do have to go through that self-reporting.
That's so true. Yes.
That is the hardest part, I think, is helping but working someone through that self-identification of limits and them coming to terms with, okay, I used to be able to do everything. I was an accountant or CEO or factory worker. It doesn't matter. And now you're telling me I need to put a blue piece of tape on my key so that I can find the door lock with the blue piece of tape on it. And it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Now, but some of those tips could be helpful for any of us.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I have to write things down all the time, and I think I have a pretty decent memory. Sometimes I question it after having a kid, which a lot of people talk about, but
That's pregnancy brain or
it doesn't go away. I don't know.
but it turns into infant, toddler, adult brain.
So a kid is my excuse for the rest of forever. Sounds good. I do like what they say in this article as a positive, that a benefit of this is if we know that someone might be at risk or have some signs of what could be dementia, we can intercede earlier and maybe use those things. You know, what's wrong with putting a piece of tape on your key to help you live functionally and live your independent life better? You know, what's wrong with using the calendar and having it here? Those things are things that anybody, whether you have dementia or you're just managing your schedule, could benefit from.
You guys remember years ago, again, I think it's like an 80s thing, ginkgo biloba came out?
Not familiar.
No. It was some kind of natural substitute thing. And I always used to joke because I bought it, but I kept forgetting to take it.
I can't take my memory medicine because I don't remember it. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, this is the one thing that worries me because there's a family history of dementia in my family. You know, y'all know what I meant. And like, it's those little things that it's, you know, like, oh, I put my keys not in the same spot every time I come home, and then spend 20 minutes every morning looking for my keys. And so it's kind of scary.
So talk about things that cause you anxiety. As I'm scrolling through this article, it links to other things to get you to read, right? And there's a link to a titled article that says, stress isn't killing us, but stressing about it might be.
Yep. About some.
That sounds about right.
What are your strategies for working with patients with dementia? We want to hear from you. Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. Email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, 614-681-1798. That's where you can leave us your golden voice, or you can always hashtag us, Speech Science, on the Twitters, and we will find out what's going on over there right now on the hashtag Speech Science. It's an interesting conversation and communication about the language we use with our Google and Siri assistants. So we want to hear from you on that one. After the break, Dr. Jim from Camp Yes And sat down with me. We talked a little bit about improv and autism, and he's got a little bit of a sneak peek about what he's going to be talking at ASHA this week. You're listening to Speech Science.
Hey everyone, you know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speech Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Dr. Jim Insaldo of the Indiana University's Camp Yes And. Dr. Jim, thank you so much for sitting down.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt.
So first I have to ask, is it as cold and bitter in Indiana right now as it is in Cincinnati?
It's kind of like hanging in there in the 50s. So if you get in the sunshine, it feels decent. yesterday we had an incredibly blustery day, so like my grill cover is in the backwoods and that kind of thing.
We are, full disclosure, we're recording 2 days before Halloween, and I am sadly looking at rain for a five-year-old trick-or-treating. So
I have two teenagers, so they've sort of transitioned into the having a Halloween party phase.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Jim, first, what is your background? How are you in the speech therapy? How did you get involved? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I was a high school English and theater teacher, and I started performing in improvisational theater like my freshman year of college. So my journey to become a high school teacher went right alongside my journey of learning this improvisation skill set. So my master's project, I got a master's in teaching certification, was actually around using improv in the classroom as a teaching tool. And I was lucky enough to student teach with a great English and theater teacher who let me actually design an improv unit for students with disabilities. So very early on in my career, these things were kind of together. And then when I came to Indiana University in 2000, I got a position as a research associate at the Center on Education and Lifelong Learning at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community, and was really immersed in the world of teacher education. So fast forward then about 15 years, and I heard about these improv classes that were happening in a couple of different places in the country for youth with autism, and connected with a fantastic educator, social worker, therapist in Austin who was teaching these classes. And we developed Camp Yes And out of that, sort of combining this idea of communication and social skills instruction for youth with autism through improv, and my teacher professional development and school change kind of hat. And then on top of that, we were lucky enough that in our first year of camp, we were joined by a young woman who was a doctoral student and earning her CCC SLP certification. So she really helped us to focus our work on something that would be practical and useful and evidence-based for SLPs.
That's pretty awesome. And I saw in your background that you trained at the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Sciences. And a little personal note, I was listening to an interview with Alan Alda probably about a year ago, or maybe a little bit less than a year ago. And he was talking about improv and using it with students with, with disabilities. And I started to use it in one of my pragmatics classes. And then the ASHA journal came out, and then that's how I got to contact you. But what was that like going to the Alan Alda Center, Hawkeye himself, kind of learning a little bit about improv from the great improver himself?
Well,
or at least the facility.
Yeah, the facility was fantastic. And actually, I disappointed my mother by letting her know that I didn't actually get to meet Alan Alda himself. Yeah, I know. So, Alan, if you're out there, I know you're listening. Just for my mother, please, let's get together.
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
But it was fantastic. It was in some ways a little bit similar to what we do in that what they did was a one-week intensive for researchers and medical professionals. And their curriculum combines improv exercises that are focused on like being flexible, being in the moment, connecting with your audience. And they combine that with a communications-focused curriculum called Distilling Your Message that really helps those folks to communicate complex topics to a lay audience in a way that's understandable but still accurate. So I got to then sit in on this boot camp for researchers and medical professionals and learn how to facilitate the activities and that sort of thing. So it was a real hands-on experience, which is similar to what we do with our camp. Each morning of camp, we work just with educators, which are K-12, general and special educators, SLPs, school psychologists and social workers, etc. We teach them improv games. We give them a chance to try them out, to get comfortable with them. And then each afternoon, we all work together with a group of teens on the spectrum and run improv camp. So it's a hands-on experience for them as well. They don't just hear about it. They get to actually try it.
I have a background, a little, not as much as yourself, a little background in theater. So I understand improv to a point. But to many of our listeners, they're thinking improv, they're thinking whose line is it anyway? How does that relate directly to helping a student on the spectrum?
Yeah, so a lot of people are familiar with improv comedy, which is the most popular form. But improv is really just theater that's made up on the spot. So it's just like going to see a play, except that the characters, the plot, the setting are all made up in the moment between the actors. And in order to accomplish that, we really have to agree to kind of one rule. And the shorthand for that rule is yes and. So what that really means is, if you and I got up on a stage, it's a blank stage. We don't know who we are as characters or where we are or what's happening. One of us has to throw out an offer. And the classic example I use is, hey, would you like a glass of milk? Right? So there's an offer. You might be my parent offering that to me, or you might be, we might be on the farm and it's fresh milk, whatever that is, but it's a piece of information. My job then as your scene partner is to accept that offer that, if you hand me this pantomimed glass of milk, that's what it is. I'm not going to change it into something else. And then I need to add to it. And I can add to it that I love milk, that I hate milk, that I'm lactose intolerant, whatever I want to. But that's the yes and. I accept your offer and then I add to it. And the thing I add becomes a new offer that you accept and add to. And now we're off to the races. We're in a cycle of making offers, accepting them and adding to them. And that process really mirrors the process of social communication. Ideally. actually, it becomes really interesting when we talk about that idea of if you said, hey, would you like a glass of milk? I could take that glass of milk as a character in a scene and smash it on the floor and say, I hate milk. My mother forced me to drink it every night, right? So I don't have to like the milk or drink the milk, but I accept the reality that you've offered. And that becomes a really interesting idea for us to think about in terms of social communication. How do we accept the idea that someone is living in a reality that may be a little different than ours? And then how do we add our own to it and create something together? So really all of these games are playing around with that core mechanic at its heart.
Do you find there's a certain game or activity that works better with the majority, or is it every year, every camp's a little bit different?
A little of both. The adults and the teens all come with their own unique prior knowledge and experience. And I think that one of the wonderful things about the improv stage is that it really lets us all bring that unique perspective and then we combine them in ways that we never expected. So there is some variety, but in general, we tend to start camp off with some games that I think of as low barrier for entry. So for example, we have a game called Everybody Come Over Here If, and we're in a big open space and we're all standing up, and one of us camp facilitators will start and we'll find a little bit of open space and say, everybody come over here if, and we'll follow that with something that's true of me. So I might say, everybody come over here if you'd be okay with eating pizza every day for the rest of your life, right? And if you're okay with that, you might come over toward me. If you really feel strongly in agreement, you might come close. If you really disagree, you might go farther away. If you're brand new and you're terrified, you might just stay where you are. And any of that is okay, right? It's a very low barrier to entry kind of game. And as we go, then we invite our teens and our teachers to start contributing things about themselves. And it's a great game because we start to learn that there are all kinds of ways in which we're similar and we're different. But improv is a type of experience where we all belong, whether we have the same experience or whether we have a different experience.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I love it. And so that, you know, the first part of that first day is really building that trust and that safety and the that it's okay to take some risks. We move into some games that are purposefully designed to get us to mess up. And we introduce the idea that, like, in improv, we actually like mistakes. You know, we like the unexpected. And so getting comfortable with that idea that it's okay to make mistakes in a learning environment is super important, often as much for our teachers as for our teens.
One of the activities I was doing, I've not like you guys, I'm using just a little bit of improv. Mm-hmm. I was so amazed when I introduced, I've always called it the mirror game.
Yes.
Where you try to mimic each other's body languages. And
yes, I'm
talking about reading body language. And to see some of my students that were so, didn't want to move their body when you talk to them and say, how was your weekend? Or how was, you know, the test or anything like that. To see them trying to make themselves look like they're Egyptians or flap their wings to get their partner to do it.
Yeah.
I saw so much growth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think the games make sort of the hidden rules explicit. There's a lot about our behavior that's just kind of under the surface. We read the situation and we learn that mirroring as infants, probably start at least starting at that point, you know, mirroring. And for a lot of the kids we work with, if we bring that to the surface, make it explicit, and provide practice and feedback, they take to it very easily, a lot of them. So
I do want to talk a little bit about the camp itself, though, if you're okay with that.
Oh, sure.
So it's a 5-day camp. Is it only 1 week during the summer, or are there multiple weeks?
We're up to 3 weeks now. We have 2 weeks in Indianapolis, Indiana, and 1 week in Bloomington. And we're waiting on hearing back around some funding that might enable us to do our first couple weeks of spring break camp in Ooh. Northeast Indiana. So I'm excited about that.
And then I was reading, and I think you said as well, in the morning, you're pulling in teachers. Is that right?
That's right. So in the morning, we work with our educators, and that's, you know, it's a broad term. So for me, that includes SLPs, school psychologists, really anybody that works with young people in an educational or therapeutic setting. We teach them improv games. We give them a chance to practice, allow them to be comfortable and, you know, take risks and make mistakes, all that kind of stuff. A lot as the week progresses around how to scaffold games, how to break them down, and teach them incrementally, how to conduct what we call experiential assessment, meaning like how to read the group and see what the group needs by how they're behaving, and then choose games or adapt games based on what we're seeing. So they really, as the week progresses, not only are learning games and exercises, but really what we kind of call yes and brain, like how do I see my students' behaviors as offers similar to that, hey, would you like a glass of milk offer on stage, and then accept that offer and add to it from my professional expertise. So then that's the morning where, you know, working as educators on assessment and selecting interventions and all that sort of thing, even though it's in the improv world. And then in the afternoon, we're all working together with the kids. So they get to see us facilitating the games, and they get to start to kind of step over the line from talking about it to doing it. And, you know, they try out facilitating some games and work one-on-one with kids and that sort of thing. So I just find that after 5 days of that, people feel really confident and energized, and they're ready to go back and do it. So as compared to some other professional development I've been involved in, I get many more emails saying, hey, I tried this and it worked well, and I did this thing, and et cetera. So it's really exciting.
I'll be honest, when I was reading about your camp, it's the first time that I've ever looked at my schedule a year in advance and said, I need to make sure I can try to go to one of these camps, because normally it's like, okay, I got to go get some CEUs, but this seems like trying to take everything that we do in speech therapy and boiling it down to the most important concentrated stuff.
I feel so fortunate to have stumbled onto it, because it really is very practical for SLPs and other folks who are involved in social skills instruction. You can take it and start using it right away, no matter what kind of curriculum you have, with different group sizes. You know, I worked with a elementary school SLP, and we did improv games in the hallway because that's the only space we had. So it's very flexible and low cost. And then on the other side of it, so, you know, it's this practical and flexible tool, but also the educators just walk away from that week feeling renewed and energized and creative. And like they can really connect with their students, which is really, I think, what drives so many of us, just to make this connection with a young person and kind of see them light up and learn something. And that's just the best thing. So it's a wonderful combination that I feel lucky to be a part of.
As you're describing it, it reminds me, I went to Ohio University out here in Athens, Ohio.
Okay.
And I had a professor. She used to say that a good therapist could do therapy with only a deck of cards. And it really feels like when you're looking at improv, it really puts that in the limelight. You just have your body.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and to go a little bit research nerd on you, there's all this research around teacher self-efficacy, which is, it just says, like, the more confident I feel that what I'm going to do is going to have a benefit for my students, the more that seems to be true, that there is a benefit, like, no matter what methods we're using. And I think as educators learn, like, I have everything I need with me all the time. I have this incredible life experience and all this professional education and this body and speaking voice and this ability to connect with young people. And that's really what I need. So I think they just come out of it feeling really confident.
Now, you mentioned research, and I'm going to ask a couple questions on that. How much research have you guys done with this? Is there any future studies like tied to this that you guys are looking at, or is it still just in the camp phase?
Yeah, we've done a lot of program evaluation. So we have good data that says that everybody learns quite a bit in terms of the improv skills themselves. Teens and their families report that it does strengthen their quality of communication life. That's a tool we use that kind of looks at the overall impact of improving communication and social skills, and it seems to make life better. And teachers do feel more confident as a result of going through camp. Now, program evaluation is a little different from research because for research, we need to have experimental conditions where we, you know, randomly sample a group and we're trying to generalize to say, you know, improv is good for everyone. So we're not quite there yet, although there's a researcher named Blythe Corbett out of Kentucky who's done experimental research around an intervention called Sense Theater that uses quite a bit of improvisation, and they have those measurable results for youth on the spectrum. And if you look at the evidence-based practices for autism, you see things like structured play and role-playing and all, you know, things that we fit right into. So one of the things we're trying to figure out is how do we run our camp the way we want to, but also get that sort of control group experimental scenario. And so we're still working on that. We are waiting on some funding right now that if we get it, will be the first time we're able to have a researcher follow our teachers and SLPs before, during, and after camp to sort of get a sense of how this experience affects their sense of their professional identity, and then the kind of barriers and challenges to implementation in the school environment and the successes associated with that. So we're getting there with the research.
That's awesome. And I'm sure you're not doing this all by yourself, right?
No, although it's, I mean, it started as a very do-it-yourself effort. And every year we've built up. So, you know, I have a small team right now, but we really do hope to grow in the area of research. I feel like we fit very well under the umbrella of evidence-based practice, but I would like to have some more research that's specific to our program.
I'm sure there's a couple theater SLPs out there that would love to see the evidence base as well. So that way, when we go to our principals and say, we're using this, they can say, okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and for that part, I definitely could offer some literature that would back you up. It might not be specific to the Camp Yes And model, but in terms of, theater-based interventions and improv-based interventions, we have a fairly solid evidence base that we can offer.
Have you ever gotten any pushback or negative from the camp, or has it all been positive?
It's really largely been positive. We've had not every session, but a few sessions where there's been a teen that just feels like this is not for me. Okay. You know, it's been interesting. We've had a few times where a family member maybe has decided this would be really good for you and has sent them to this camp without really telling them what it's about. we've never parted ways on bad terms. So I feel good about that. We've had some teens who genuinely have said, like, I like what you're doing here and I can see how people would enjoy it, but it's not for me. But that's a pretty small percentage of people.
So what's the cost for teens? What's the cost for educators?
It's free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know that's, that's another, I often forget to mention that.
I thought it was free for the students, but then I didn't ever see anything for the staff. And I was like, okay, it's gotta be like $100. I'm okay. Or $200. I'm okay with that. But
right. Right. this year, sorry, my phone is ringing. That's okay. This year, let me just
Go for it.
Get that. Sorry. All right, should have muted that. Anyway, so this year was the first time we had asked for a registration deposit from educators.
Oh, okay.
And then at the completion of the week, we offered a stipend in the same amount. So effectively free, but also making sure that when people sign up, they're understanding what their commitment is and they're going to show up and stay for the week and that kind of thing, because we had had a few problems with cancellations.
So how do you guys fund it then? Are you guys taking donations? Is there a GoFundMe?
Yes,
is it all Indiana University? What is it?
No, you know, it's interesting. The center that I work for, exist almost entirely through grants and contracts with schools. So we function pretty much like any other nonprofit. We're not funded by the university fully. So the same goes for this program. I've been really fortunate to get some grant funding. There's a summer youth program fund in Indianapolis that is a collaboration between about a dozen different local foundations, and they've given us some funding. We've had some funding from an organization called AWS Foundation in Indiana, and Answers for Autism, the Monroe County Autism Foundation. So just shout outs to our funders. Thank you so much. And then a big piece of our funding has been crowdfunding. IU uses a platform called Fundly. So it's not GoFundMe, but it's the same kind of thing. And we often have a big fundraising push during April, which is, you know, Autism Awareness Month. But if you visit our website at yesand.indiana.edu, we're happy to take donations at any time. And then one more successful strategy for us has been fundraising events. So I perform with a group called Comedy Sports, and we're Comedy Sports Indianapolis. There are close to 30 now Comedy Sports teams around the country in different cities. And so it's a fantastic network of people who love improv comedy and have supported what I do in an incredible way. And so Comedy Sports Indianapolis every year hosts a fundraiser for us where they donate the space and the players donate their time and all the ticket sales go to camp. And we've also been fortunate enough that a friend of mine who plays for Comedy Sports has donation matching through his workplace. So he's been able to submit the proceeds for our fundraiser to get that donation matched. So, you know, basically we're scrambling and hustling for funding, but we've been able to make it work and keep it free, which is pretty important to me.
That's huge. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this may or may not surprise folks, but the estimate, you know, cost in terms of like increased medical costs for families with kids on the spectrum is somewhere between $40,000 and $60,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I just saw another study that came out around the huge percentage of educators that spend money out of pocket, not only for their own professional development, but even just for classroom materials. And that gets into the thousands of dollars. So it's just important to me, if we can keep doing it and offering this for free, then that means the people who are really willing to take chances, the people that either come from a low income background or work with kids in a low income background, will be able to come and learn this stuff and take it back home with them.
Well, Dr. Jim, you are doing some awesome stuff out there. If people want more information, what was that website again, and where can they find you?
That is Yes And, all one word for the web address, yesand.indiana.edu. And we have a contact form there, and I'm pretty good with responding quickly and would love to hear from you. We're on Facebook. If you look up Camp Yes And, you'll see us there too. I don't know if you have listeners in the Boston area, but on November 17th, which is the afternoon of the Saturday of the ASHA convention, I'm teaching a workshop that's an introduction to improv for educators. So lots of opportunities.
The year I'm not going to ASHA.
I know. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Jim, I'll throw those links on our side as well. Thank you so much for sitting down.
Yeah, thank you.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speed Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michelle Wintering.
Hello again.
And Mailing.
Hello.
So normally this is where I give the fun story about like the student coaching or overcoming. And front and center, true believers, I've got super sad news. Stan Lee, Excelsior himself, has passed away today. I am uberly bummed by this. I don't even know why, but I am so sad by this.
Well, I know why, because that's something that's such a big part of your life outside of, well, I would say you use comics and superheroes and everything else as part of your day-to-day life, Matt. So
I use it in therapy.
Exactly.
Stan Lee, I use Spider-Man and the X-Men daily in high school therapy.
It's a great motivator.
Yeah. Well, Matt, give people a quick rundown of who this gentleman is. Stan
Lee, he was the CEO / the face of Marvel Comics. He's created, you know, Fantastic Four, the X-Men, most of the Avengers, you know, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, the Submariner, Thor, Iron Man, Hulk.
All your favorites.
The world is sadder today just because of this.
Yeah.
I have a little fun fact. We actually have several comics that were signed by Stan Lee.
I will be sneaking into your house and stealing those at some point.
We don't keep them in the house.
Never invite me over. Stanley, he came to Cincinnati a couple years ago, and I got to stand within 10 feet of the living legend. And he's just such a good dude. He's always stood up for what we do, like when we try to take care and help people that need to be helped. I love this quote. It's Stan Lee from Balder to Brave. "There must always be those with the fire of rebellion in their blood. There must always be those who will dare to fight an unbeatable enemy. Only thus can the race of man remain strong and fearless." So Stan Lee, I hope you tonight are sitting with your lovely wife and enjoying looking down on all of us crying into our Spider-Man video games while you are up there enjoying life in the digital. Is it digital? I guess Marvel world, wherever he is. So,
if immortality existed, would I choose to be immortal, or would I rather be a superhero or a supervillain? Well, of course, I'd rather be a superhero than a supervillain. I don't think I'd want to be immortal unless
why not?
Unless it went for everybody. I wouldn't want to be alive while all my friends and relatives were dying. But if everybody could be immortal, I think that could be fun.
But you'd meet new people. You'd meet new people.
Well, that's true, but no. I like the people that I know, and I want to have them around.
Are you afraid of dying?
No, not at all.
Do you think you go somewhere?
No. The one thing I can't understand, I can't grasp my mind around, I feel when you die, there's just nothing. It's like when you're asleep and you're not dreaming. But I can't imagine nothingness lasting forever.
Sorry, I had to nerd out for a moment there, guys. I'm so sorry.
No, don't apologize. It's important news.
Do you guys have like a celebrity that you're just would be devastated if when they pass?
Oprah,
really?
Mm-hmm. Yep, she's my girl.
Okay. Michelle?
I'm not offhand. I can't think of an immediate one. If I come up with it, I'll let you know. That's the kind of thing that I'll be thinking of when I'm driving home one day at like a Thursday afternoon. So
I have a baker's dozen of celebrities that I will be celebrating when they pass, but I will not go into that because I don't want them to not give us money eventually. All right, let's send this puppy home. Mailing, I know you're going to Asha, but what else are you doing in the next exciting week? Any super awesome guests on your show that they should listen for?
Well, we just had Kathy Hoffman. She is an Arizona speech-language pathologist who left the school district in Peoria back in August to commit full-time to campaigning. And I had interviewed her actually before the primary, so she didn't even know she had won the Democratic seat. So she just won after 5 days after the election. We had to wait that long because they were like manually counting ballots. It's amazing. So she just won for the Arizona State Superintendent of Education.
That's awesome.
So, yes, I'm so excited. And I know that Ash is going to pick her up, and I'm sure we'll see something in the leader on her. So I do have an episode. And it's great because she doesn't talk about politics or her campaign at all. She talks just about being a speech-language pathologist and how she made these choices to run and how it's affected her and her family.
That's awesome. I was hoping you were going to say that because I was on the show this week. That was the super
awesome. And this week, some speech-language had the podcast or something.
Some guy.
No, Michelle, what are you doing this week down there in the land of Kentucky?
Well, I guess I have some podcasts I need to go download and listen to. I can listen to more of Matt's voice on his interview, right?
The dulcet tones of Cincinnati.
You have to listen to him. He's so adorable, really. And I swear, I think his voice is just like butter.
You do. You have a great radio voice, Matt.
It's almost like that's what I went to school originally for.
Y'all
getting there.
Fantastic. And then Chris Bouguet from Talking With Tech, I listened to him a lot. And then he came out here because he was doing a in-person presentation. And he was in the car, and I couldn't believe it. I could ask him a question, and he would answer back.
You're like, why are you answering me? You shouldn't be able to hear me.
Yes.
Aww.
That's pretty neat, though.
Yeah, for me, the only thing I've got, I had 6 IEPs and ETR meetings today, and I've got a total of 30 more left between now and Christmas break.
Matt, give yourself a pat on the back. There you go.
I need that hand to type. It might break on my shoulders of sleep.
Can you see me on Zoom? I'm playing the smallest little violin for you.
Yep. I appreciate that. We want to hear from you. Go over our website, podcast.speechscience.org. You can email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. In the immortal words of Janice Wright, be a willow, because under pressure, the mighty oak will crack. The willow just kind of bends and comes back strong. For Michelle Wintering and Mailing Chan, I'm Matt Hott saying peace out. We'll see you next week. Our opening music tonight was Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music is The Temperature of the Air on the Bow of the Calatine by Chris Zabrinsky. And our closing music tonight is Slow Burn by Kevin MacLeod. See you next week.
You're listening to the Exceptional Podcast Network.